Guitarathon is the greatest guitar sale on earth, and it's happening now. Get massive savings on a huge selection of electric and acoustic guitars, basses, amps, pedals, and other accessories. Get select Ernie Ball strings, 3 for $10. Save $100 on a Fender Special Edition Strat, or get a Yamaha acoustic for just $199. Plus, get special financing on select major brands. Don't miss these incredible deals. Available online and in-store, now through November 1st. Guitarathon, only at Guitar Center. Find your sound.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. As always, I am Chris Manning, your host from Fear the Sword and the Step Back. Today, it's the end of the regular season. Thank God. I am very happy that the regular season is over. The Cavs lose their final regular season game 98-83 with Kyrie and LeBron and Kevin Love all sitting out against the Toronto Raptors. You did have Eddie Tavares, who David Griffin went out of his way to call Walter several times in his pregame scrum. Made his debut. Ed Dante Jones also played in this game. And the Cavs lose. They're now going to be the number two seed in the Eastern Conference. We'll play the Indiana Pacers in the first round on Saturday at 3 p.m., and which should be a pretty entertaining first-round series there. But to help me break this all down, I have a very special guest. He was on the show way back in the early days of the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. It is Chris Barnwell from a bajillion different sites on the internet, including The Step Back, The Number Fire, and At the Hive. Chris, my man, what's going on?
Not much. It's a little late to be recording this, but I'm ready to get some Cavs information down.
Yeah, Chris, shouts out to Chris, who's now on the guest rankings power list that I have in my head. He's now number one. Carter betrayed me.
He's doing
a podcast with somebody else. You know, I mean, shout out to Carter.
I hear Carter likes to hang out with trash cans in his free time.
Yes. But it's 12, as we record this, it's like a little after midnight, which is super late for me to get home. And plus, one just shouts to Chris. And at the end of the show, you will get some audio from the game. I actually came up from the queue and now recording, and then we'll do that. And you'll get a big old show today. But Chris, before we get into the playoff stuff and looking back at this season a little bit, I just want to ask you a little bit about what's going on with the Cavs from your perspective, and especially the last couple days. Larry Sanders, that experiment doesn't even last a month. He gets cut. He gets waived, to use the correct terminology. Eddie Tavares, who's playing in the D League, comes in. They also bring back Dante Jones. What do you make of those two signings? And does it just seem like a typical Cavs-y thing to you?
I mean, I did find it endlessly entertaining how, like, a defending champion team decided to have 22 different players on their roster in one season.
Yeah, I mean,
like, they've had the least boring defending championship ever. I'm gonna say that much. Mm-hmm. And usually teams that are contending for titles don't make roster changes this late in the season. That said, neither of them were particularly bad. I don't think DeAndre Liggins is that good. I really never thought he was that good. I was surprised when he was starting earlier in the year for Cleveland. I guess he is kind of long and he has some defensive potential, but just I've never really been a big fan of his. Larry Sanders, I really was surprised when he got brought back as quick as he did, because he's been out of the NBA 2 years, or 1 year, I guess like a year and some extra time, some weird time frame. And even when he was around, he wasn't that good. Like, he had that one really good year, and then after that, it was just eh. So when they brought him back, I was like, and there was like kind of an expectation for him to like either perform either immediately or eventually become like a really good future young guy for them. But really, like, I was never high on him in the first place. I didn't think he was going to be that great, and it turns out he wasn't that great. Eddie Tavares, on the other hand, he is fantastic. I love him as a prospect. He's a really tall, shot-blocking big man.
He's also just, like, huge. Like, seeing him in person, like, when you see certain NBA players, for me, like, the first one that I realized this was that when I saw Zach Randolph. Like, I walked by him in the hallway, and I was just amazed at how, like, you know, big of a guy he was. Tavares isn't quite that big. We watch him move. He was just massive, and he had a really good game in his debut. Ended up playing the whole second half. Four shots, makes three of them, scores 6 points, I believe, 10 rebounds, also had 6 blocks, which is like the most blocks a Cavs player's had in a half in like a decade or something like that. It's something crazy. I thought he was really good. He already has played more minutes than Larry Sanders ever played with the Cavs.
So like, and Tavares is everything they wanted Larry Sanders to be, and probably is already as good as Sanders ever was.
Yeah, I don't know about like the best of Sanders ever was, because I think
entire career.
Yeah, I mean, like the Sanders' overall career is like not something that's like great, but that 1 year it was spectacular. I'm gonna read this quote from David Griffin, and then we'll pause it onto the playoffs and looking back at the regular season a little bit. So David Griffin has a pregame availability. And this is what he said about Sanders. I think Larry did everything we asked him to do. He worked incredibly hard. Our coaches in the D-League and Mike Ganzi, who runs our D-League team, did a good job of getting him minutes and getting him into a position where he had his legs under him and felt comfortable. I think we just got to the point where we realized he wasn't close to playing meaningful NBA games, and if we knew we weren't going to play him at all, it's difficult to feel good about holding on to him into a year where he's not guaranteed. It's not fair to him either. I think we just made a decision to do something now instead of playing it out and knowing he wouldn't play. So that, to me, a couple interesting things. One, I have a hard time believing they thought he would have been impactful right away. Griffin also said in another quote that they view him as like a Tristan Thompson, more like that's how they thought Sanders might be. Tavares is just like the big, bulky guy. And then off of that, I think it's interesting to me that they would kind of play this out and maybe expect them to make an impact by now, and like maybe they believe in their culture that much. Maybe they thought the D League would have been the way to get them to do that, because I think like Tavares sort of was available a month ago. Tavares was available when Bogut went down. Eric Moreland is another guy that like could have, if you wanted someone who could help you right now that does also then and was also young. Tavares was there a while ago, so I kind of wonder if they thought the upside of Sanders was worth that risk. But it's like weird that you would go move off of that in a month to me. But I do hope Sanders gets another shot. Like, I thought he played well in the D League. I thought he did seem to just kind of want to fit in, and some of it, you know, was interesting. Some of it could have been goofy. We don't know everything, of course, but I thought he did kind of what I would have expected him to do in that first month. I wouldn't have expected him to come out and be a rotation guy.
Yeah, I mean, from the quote you said, the thing I really took away from him was that he worked hard and that he tried to fit into the situation, which I think while Sanders might have not kept his roster spot through his play, the fact that Griffin went out immediately to say that he worked hard is big for a guy like Sanders, who when he left the NBA, it was kind of like, does this guy actually care about playing basketball, and is he willing to put in the work to play basketball? So if the team he was just on is immediately trying to clarify, we are doing this move because of performance, not because of his work ethic, that's a really big plus for Sanders, who, while he might still have ways to go as a player, like performance-wise, that issue of his work ethic or the effort he's going to make, or if he might just all of a sudden decide to leave again out of nowhere like he did originally with the Bucks, like that's not going to happen again, which that's important for a guy like Sanders who had the situation he had in Milwaukee.
Yeah. I think he might be best served to go to a situation where they can just let him play.
Like Brooklyn?
Well, no, because I don't even know if like Brooklyn's like the right way to put it, because I think...
Well, I just mean a team like them.
Yeah, but you need, like, I think you need the structure. Like, I do think you need a structure for him to succeed in. Like, I think that's one of the things that he liked about Cleveland, was that he sort of knew he had a role to fill there. Like, and I think he liked having like that focus that was more than just, I'm here to just play basketball. I think he liked having something like to actually play for. So like, how do you combine those two things? I guess like maybe Houston with all their guys. Like maybe this. I mean the Spurs, if like he could fit in that culture, that'd be sort of interesting. I don't know. Like I hope he gets another chance. You know, that to me.
He's tall and big. Kwame Brown stayed around forever for being tall and big, so Larry Sanders will always have a spot somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, he's almost 7'2". But Tavares was really good in his debut. He's a massive movement. Chris Reichert, friend of the pod, and the guy who covers the D-League better than really anybody out there.
Reichert Rocket!
Yeah, shout out to Chris Reichert. Team Chris in the Step Back Slack thread our channel. I just dated. I made myself seem really old. he's pretty high on Tavares, and it'll be interesting to see if he plays in the playoffs, and what he might look like. And I'm seeing this quote come across, and this is what this is the quote. I must have missed this, but he said, quote, "I see him in reference to LeBron James, and it's like a movie to me, like it's not real." It's pretty crazy that he was like playing in Ontario, Canada, and like playing in Canton, Ohio, like in the D League, and then it's like, oh yeah, you're gonna play with LeBron James, and you know, maybe end up in the finals.
That's always a nice place to be.
I mean, I wish getting paid too is pretty great. But all right, so Chris, we're gonna first look back at our regular season. You and I did over unders. We're not gonna go through all of them because that would be painstaking, and we all would just feel dumb afterwards. At least I would feel dumb.
Is one team we have to talk about.
I want to hear there's three things, whether they're good, bad, or you just want to you feel vindicated in your prediction that you feel like surprised you or at least were intriguing to you this past NBA season, regular season. Because we got 6 weeks left of this.
Okay, well, surprising. I just want to immediately go to two things that I actually thought one I was right about, one I was wrong about. I was right about Portland. I don't care that they're in the playoffs. They are not a good basketball team. They are an overrated basketball team. Let the hot takes fly right now. They got lucky in the fact that Denver was trying to dump off Yusuf Nurkic, who whined his way out of Denver. Congratulations to him. He got to the perfect situation for him, and he's thriving. He's an incredible basketball player at that. But Portland was awful until about 2 months ago. I was so wrong about Detroit, though.
Dude, we're both real wrong about the Pistons.
I had them, don't you remember, though? I had them, like, second in the East.
Yeah, I mean, I had them, like, third or fourth, and, like, I've been reading, like, Pistons stuff recently. Like, that team just seems like a mess.
They all hate each other.
Yeah, I feel like that the Pacers don't like each other either, but, like, the Pacers, like, made the playoffs, so it's, like,
the Pacers are, like, willing to, like, work with each other to do it. The Pistons are just, like, we don't even want to win basketball games, like,
yeah.
Just, I'm amazed at just how much the Pistons don't like each other.
Yeah, no, 100% agree.
100%. I was so in on Reggie Jackson, I thought Stan Van Gundy was going to turn Andre Drummond into, like, a mini Dwight Howard, but no, it was all colossal failure.
Yeah, okay, so I'll give you my three things real quick. Number one, the thing that I'm most surprised about that I guess I maybe shouldn't have been is that the MVP race was incredible. It is incredible. I think you certainly could pick any of the – there's four really good candidates to me. Kawhi, in no order, because I'm not going to say who I would have voted for because I don't necessarily feel like I've done enough research to actually have an opinion on this. Shouts to Matt Moore for just doing like an insane amount of work on that.
Like, that dude's insane. Matt,
I love you. You're welcome to come back on the pod anytime you want. Holy crap. Like, you deserve, like, a nap and, like, more naps and, like, lots of coffee after your MVP.
He went over more information than I think, like, the average person does over, like, five MVP races.
Yeah, like, I think I would have just, like, imploded and my brain wouldn't have worked. But, like, it's Russ, Harden, LeBron, and Kawhi. I wouldn't have expected that. You know, like, you usually get one or two guys, or it's, like, one guy that takes, like, the narrative and whatever, for lack of a better word there. I really, really think, you know, what an incredible MVP race. And, like, every twist and turn, all the guys that look like they were pulling ahead and stuff like that, just an incredible season. There's, like, guys like Curry had an underrated year, and I think he, like, it probably should be, like, fifth. I think, like, Isaiah, like, I don't think he's actually an MVP candidate, but, like, what a year for him. What a year for John Wall. What a year for Giannis. What a year for Jokic. Like, just incredible years from all these guys. Really fun overall regular season.
The point guards this year were insane, especially in the East.
Yes.
Like, there was a legitimate possibility that one of Kemba Walker, Kyrie Irving, Kyle Lowry, Isaiah Thomas we're going to get left out of the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Or not the playoffs, the All-Star game. And, like, they all got in. But, like, for a while, we were like, which guy should kind of get let off? Because no one was really sure. Like, that's how good everyone was playing. Like, yeah. them and all of them and Wall.
Yeah. So, then my number – you go ahead.
And I actually do have a surprise now that I think about it. How offense dominated this year entirely. If you like check the per 100 possession rankings of offense right now, the top 10 teams, only one of them is not a play. Only two of them are not playoff teams: the Wolves and the Nuggets. But if you go to defense, it's like Atlanta, Miami, Chicago, like teams that aren't that great. They're all top five defenses, while the top five offenses are like Golden State, Houston, Cleveland, the Clippers, Toronto's at six. Like, offense is where the good teams were this year. While defense just was like sporadic.
Yeah. Defense definitely was a little bit down. You had, I think, just, I mean, some really, really inventive offense, some really like overwhelmingly great offenses like Houston and Golden State and everything like that were just incredible. This is something I feel like I need to dive into more, but like, I think you had and this is something that's like not necessarily like a new idea, but like, what a year for like young players. Like, what a year for like young, exciting guys. Like, Jokic had his breakout year. Porzingis had another good year. Freaking Joel Embiid was the most transfixing player in the league for 31 games. He had Giannis. He had like guys like Clint Capella having good years as well. And like, don't even mention, like, we don't talk, I don't think like as a group, like, we're talking collectively enough about like Karl Anthony Towns was still like utterly ridiculous this year. Like,
the him and Anthony Davis were amazing.
Like, holy crap. Like, Kat's like in his second year and he's doing just these unreal things. The NBA's like got a very, very like bright future beyond like LeBron, beyond Curry, like beyond these guys. Like, Kawhi is still pretty, it's like hard to believe Kawhi is like, I think, 25 years old still, and he's really, really good. Like, the NBA, to me, like, this year just set it up for, like, another, like, a long, long run of really interesting things. Like, I'm pretty excited.
Oh, it's really fun that we're really getting to see, like, the new era kind of coming into its own already. Like, we can kind of see it in the distance to, like, the guys who are going to be running this place in 5 to 6 years, and that's exciting.
Yeah, and, like, there's, like, seven guys I think could, like, take the mantle of the next player in the NBA. If I'm, like, a great player. Like, I think it's, like, two options to me are the most likely, you know?
Anthony Davis and Towns?
Well, I'll say three then: Davis, Kat, and Giannis. Like, I think Giannis just like, I can't figure that guy out. Like, he breaks the rules of physics.
I want to see Giannis get better on defense first, but I agree. No, like,
Kat,
I
mean, but Kat, I agree, but Kat is the but same
he keeps
thing.
He keeps getting better like every year. It's incredible.
Yeah. Like,
I'm like, maybe we should like roll it back on Giannis. He like just blows up every time.
Yeah, 100% agree. And then the last thing I have on this year, I will remember this year as just like there were things that I need to go back and like sort of figure out because they don't like I didn't. There's just a lot of stuff I feel like I didn't see coming. And I feel like that's always gonna happen, but like Jokic's breakout to me was like this like really big, kind of impressive thing. And then like you have I think like the Wizards kind of figuring things out, which to me was a little bit surprising. Like, I don't know. There's just, like, things this year that I can't really quite, like, wrap my mind around yet, and I'm pretty kind of excited to see where this sort of heads. And I also feel like if I was wrong about teams, I feel like I was definitely wrong about the Heat, because shouts to Deion. I'm pretty sure – I can't remember. And, that Chris, when we do – you and I are going to do this next year. You and I will do over-unders again, and I will, like, put them in Excel, and I will save that file, and, like, we will be able to reference it at the end of the year. But, like, if I'm remembering right, I felt wrong – I think I was wrong about the Heat.
I told you I was excited about them.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta say bless the god, Deion Waiters.
I think I picked them for like in my top five league pass teams, and you were like, ew. I was like, no, this team's gonna be young and exciting. And well, I was mad wrong about the Sixers, but I also didn't think Joel Embiid was gonna be as fun as he was.
Yeah, Embiid just like, and they're not, they're like, Sarge is great, but like, nothing is on Embiid. We're gonna have to do this. I mean, we'll have to do this next year and like just kind of see how that goes. But I feel like I was wrong about the Heat, and I feel like I was definitely wrong about the Pistons. And I feel like the West was sort of harder to be wrong about because there's just like better teams. And I feel like I was wrong about Charlotte being like Charlotte's point differential.
They confused the hell out of me.
Their point differential is like pretty good. Like they have like they're like solid, and like they should not be as bad as they are. Like I feel like they should have at least been in contention for that 8 seed.
They were like 0-9 in clutch game situations this year, like overtime and close games. Like they couldn't close out games this year. It was so weird. And they started off the year so incredible. Like I couldn't believe they missed the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. interesting little season. It's a lot of fun little wrinkles. So, all right, so here we go, looking at the playoffs. Cavs are getting the Pacers. Chris, what do you make of that series?
We're going to finally find out if Cleveland can switch the flip the switch or not. Flip the switch, yeah.
Yeah, one, I got so many, like, retweets. Like, I got tweeted. I get into it. I got to take the retweets as they come. But, like, I got a bunch of tweets, like, from my tweets.
Mr. Big Shot over here. Get retweets.
I mean, like, only because I tweeted, like, I got pictures of, like, shoes. You know, like, I tweeted these, like, there's a flip the switch pack from Nike. And there's LeBron and Kyrie's in it, of course. Like, you can get, like, this collection if people were, like thinking, like, this was, like, the Cavs, like, trolling people. Which it's really, like, Nike, like, kind of trolling, I guess. But, I think this is a pretty good series to indicate if how good the Cavs are going to be right away. Because I think, like, the Cavs should beat the Pacers in, like, 5 games.
They should. Like, the only reason they won't is Paul George might go off. Like, that's the only reason they wouldn't sweep them.
Yeah, like, I mean, like, CJ Miles is going to probably have a good series. He loves playing against the Cavs ever since they kind of didn't, like, want to bring him back that summer.
Aren't Cleveland also awful in Indiana for, like, no reason at all?
Yeah, like, they could never win. Like it was not until LeBron came back that Tristan and Kyrie, members of the 2011 draft class, ever won in Miami.
You mean Indiana?
Or Indiana, that, wow. I mean, they've lost to Miami. Like, they lost to the Heat 13 times in a row. So, like, that too. But, they have a weird time in Indiana. I think the Pacers, like, are gonna be, like, a little bit better in the playoffs because they can justify shortening their bench. I'm very excited for the Lance LeBron playoff reunion. Like, I'm very excited to see, like, if anything dumb happens there. And I think, like, if Jeff Teague's ankle, he hurt his ankle in the season finale. Like, it seemed like it was pretty serious. That hangs over the series significantly for me.
Yeah, if they don't have Teague, I don't see how Indiana's gonna even make a dent in them, because Teague is someone that I know in Atlanta he didn't have much success against Cleveland, but Teague is really someone that can get into the paint and cause problems for a lot of teams, and if he's not healthy, like, that's just one less ball handler for them. Like, they're gonna rely on who? Monte Ellis? That's
You don't want Monte, like, dribbling a lot, and, like, you don't want Paul George, like, having to create,
like, everything.
Every yeah, especially because, like, if that means, like, I think the Celtics, like, are gonna have this problem. And I'm very curious to see how they adapt to it in the playoffs. If Isaiah isn't on the floor, like, what do they do? Like, how does Paul George, when he's, like, sitting on the bench, how does, like, his non-presence, like, impact the Pacers? Like, how does that impact the series? Because I think that's where the Cavs could, like, do a lot of damage. And I think the series, like, because of Paul George, LeBron's going to have to, like, work in the series. Like, you're going to see some Richard Jefferson, I think, on Paul George. You are going to see... maybe you'll see some. They'll try to use Tavares as a rim protector. I think that's sort of an interesting thing now. If they do try to do that, because Griffin did indicate that he is a more game ready player than Larry Sanders. But the Cavs don't have, like, a lot of guys to throw at Paul George, so I think, like, you're gonna have to see LeBron, like, lock down Paul George pretty significantly in this series, and at least put an effort in doing so. They don't necessarily, like, even need him to, but I think, like, that's kind of what you would want to see if you're going to get the best version of the Cavs.
To lock down Paul George? I mean...
like, I'm saying, like, if you're going to, like, if the Cavs are going to come out and, like fully flip the switch, I think the things you want to see is you'd want to see some of the off-the-bench guys shoot better. Like, JR's are going to have to play better in both ends. I think the defensive intensity at least has to be better early.
They have to show something on defense. I don't think you can stop Paul George...
But I'm saying, like, if LeBron is, like, engaged and, like, makes Paul George work for his points and is, like, chasing and, like, moving and not just letting him, like, get open jumpers and all this stuff, like, that's going to matter. And, like, because I think if LeBron does it, you're going to see, J.R. Smith has just, like, completely dozed off recently in defense. And if he's going to be engaged, like, that's going to help against C.J. Miles, who can get hot in really quick. Like, and Monta Ellis can get buckets. Like, they have can score. And, like, Miles Turner... like, Tristan Thompson, and he looked good and he looked actually very energetic against the Raptors on Wednesday. Like, him and Miles Turner is a pretty interesting matchup. And, like, are you going to get good defense against Channing Frye, who's been good lately? And, like, how is Kevin Love going to do? Like, there's just a lot of things, I think. If LeBron is setting the tone, that's going to reverberate across the roster.
Right. I was more making the point, like, Paul George, he's going to do what he does. Yeah. I don't think... even if LeBron plays as engaged as he possibly can, I don't think Paul George is going to be held to less than 20 points. It's more, you can't let Jeff Teague just get to the rim with no issue if he's healthy. You can't let Monte Ellis kill you on backdoor cuts because J.R. Smith was ball watching. Like, just, you need to do like simple things that, and it's amazing that we have to say this, like, you need to do amazingly simple things just to play competent defense, which that's something they haven't been doing all year, which maybe that's just because they haven't been trying, which, I mean, that happens. Like, good teams don't try. Like, they've kind of earned it. They didn't really take the regular season seriously, which that's fine, but now they have to prove that, yeah, they just weren't trying. We're legit now.
Yeah, so that to me is the most interesting sort of thing here. And I'm going to quickly interrupt this because I think this is kind of worth noting. So Jason Lloyd from The Athletic is reporting that the Cavs moved on from Larry Sanders after he missed a team bus to the airport on Tuesday in Miami. So, like, it looks like Sanders did something. Like, maybe there's more thing that we'll have to see if we get hear more from this as they have practice on Thursday, but we'll see. But I thought that was just worth interjecting there. So
this might, well, in that situation might be different than his "we work hard" comment after all.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly kind of figure there was something, you know? Like, I don't want to, like, throw people, like, under the bus or anything like that, but, like, everybody, when you're, like, a journalist, like, people lie to you. Like, that's just sort of the reality of it. And, like,
oh, yeah.
I don't think the Cavs, and, like, to their credit, we're not going to, like, throw Larry Sanders under the bus. Like, they're not going to be like, yeah, like, he was awful to work with, you know, like, on all these different things. If that was the truth, that's the truth. Like, I'm not saying it is, like, that,
Tell me the truth.
Yeah.
Tell me the truth right now. Tell them the truth. You know it, Chris.
Yeah. You know me.
You heard it in the locker room today. You were eavesdropping.
Yeah, except I was in the locker room today. So this playoff series, like, the Cavs' defense, I've talked about this on the Limited Upside pod with Mike Prada. Like, I don't think the Cavs are going to be able to, like, scheme their way to and, like, effort their way to, like, a really good defense. Like, I think, like, when Kyle Korver and Channing Frye and, like, JR, who was really good last year and hasn't been that way this year, and Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love are, like, big pieces on your team, I think there's a cap on how good you can get. I think you have to just get to a level where, like, the offense can, like, be, especially if the offense can get better, and I think it can. I think if you can get to a point where, like, you're just good enough on defense to, like, potentially overwhelm teams on offense, that's probably the best case scenario for this Cavs team.
Right, and I'm not saying that they can't have a decent scheme. I'm more saying, like, I want to see them actually try. Like, we don't even know, like, we didn't see them try on defense for the entire second half of the year. I'm not saying they're going to beat teams through effort. Like, it's the playoffs. No one wins through effort, but
right. Shout out to the Celtics.
Like, yeah, shout out to the Celtics. You're going to effort your way to the championship. I know you are.
Yeah.
But, like, it's so weird to say that this championship team that contended for a ring that's probably going to contend for another one needs to try, but they do.
Yeah,
I mean, and like, then we can start worrying about scheme.
Yeah, I mean, like, we've seen, like, we've seen guys like Kyle Korver had a quote where, like, we just want to be done with this. Like, you have Richard Jefferson, like, talking openly about that on their podcast about it. Like, the Cavs generally are sort of just, like, done with the regular season. Like, every time Lou gets asked about, like, seeding, he chuckles. You straight up just chuckled.
My favorite is when they blew that game to the Hawks. They just blew that lead. And he's like, oh, yeah, we're ready for the playoffs.
Yeah. No, like, they generally just, like, don't care. Like, they generally,
we're ready for the playoffs. I know we just blew this game. We're ready.
Yeah.
does not care. It's beautiful. I love it.
Yeah. It's like, not. It's just, like, how much better, like, can they actually get? I think that matters. I know you are working on playoff power rankings. I'm not sure which one of the bajillion sites you write for that it's at.
But it's at Fan Site.
Okay, so shout out to Fan Site. It gotta, you know, get the plug. But you have them not where I think a lot of people that are listening to this podcast are necessarily going to agree with. I kind of want you just now, if you don't mind, just kind of throw that all out there.
Please send all hate tweets about this ranking to @CavsAnaba. Okay, so let me just start off with these power rankings. it's slightly based on regular season performance, because if it's just playoff rankings, what's the point of them being power rankings? Like, you have to at least take a little bit of playoff performance into where you would properly rank them. And because of that, I had a really hard time where I was going to rank Cleveland. I didn't think it was justifiable to put them into the top three, because if it was just pure playoff rankings, who I think the three best teams of the playoffs are, I'd have them at three behind Golden State and San Antonio. That's where I would have them. But because I have to take regular season performance into account, I dropped them to six, where originally I had them at five, but Toronto currently is sixth in offensive rating and eighth in defensive rating, which they are one of three teams with the best with a top 10 offense and a top 10 defense, along with Golden State and San Antonio. That impressed me enough, along with how they've played towards the end of the season, compared to Cleveland completely, like, just taking off the end of the regular season, to where I dropped them down to six.
Noting that the Toronto 2 didn't have Kyle Lowry for a lot of that, to their credit.
Right. They have played really excellent basketball. Like, I'm not going to, like, hurt them. I don't feel like I want to reward Toronto. I still have Cleveland 6. They're still the second best Eastern Conference team by power rankings. I still think they're the best Eastern Conference team in general. I think they're going to be in the NBA Finals again. We were talking about this off of a pod where you said over under 3.5 like losses in the entire conference. I put them at under. I think they lose two or three.
Yeah, like I think last year was the two sweeps, and then they lost two to Toronto.
They're gonna sweep the first round again. LeBron always sweeps the first round.
Yeah, they're gonna. I think they're probably gonna sweep Indiana. The second round to me gets dicey because you're getting Toronto. Like, that is probably the series you're getting, unless the Bucks win that series, which I don't think is likely. That to me is probably the hardest series they could get in the East. I think. Like, I've said that is Washington before, but I think if Lowry's healthy and Ibaka's healthy and DeRozan is good and all that stuff, like, I think I think that's probably the toughest series you get. But I also don't think, like, Toronto necessarily is good enough to take three from the Cavs. Like, I think they may be the one to take two. I think they might sweep Boston if they play Boston Eastern Conference Finals.
I think they would maybe lose one freak Isaiah Thomas game maybe to Boston. I really don't know.
I'm harping on this probably too much, admittedly, but they ran this pick and roll in that game.
I saw that. He got obliterated by that pick and roll.
They ran it with Amir Johnson, and because the Cavs were just like, okay, like, we're not going to pay attention to Amir Johnson because it's Amir Johnson. Like, Isaiah couldn't see over the defenders. Like, that's a problem. When they went on that big second quarter run, when Isaiah sat, it was just LeBron dominating them. Like, I don't think they get a lot of... Boston gets credit for, like, being this good.
They get credit for being Boston.
I'm
going to throw out a hot take. Why was it that the year the Hawks won, like, 60-something games, everyone was like, you know, I don't trust the Hawks. I don't know if they're legit. And Boston has one good year, and everyone's like, oh, yeah, I'm into Boston?
Yeah, I mean, I don't believe that. But, like, my thing is, like, they're, like, good for where they were, like, a couple years ago. Like, Horford and Isaiah and, like, all these guys are really good players. I'm a huge fan of a lot of their guys. I just don't think they, like, actually have anything to beat the Cavs. And, like, I think it's, like, really funny that, like, they've made a big deal about the number one seed. Because, like,
I think having home court's important. Like, if you're...
God, I don't think it matters.
If you're a team that has to compete against, like, actual title contenders like Cleveland, you want that home court. You need every extra advantage you can have. I don't know if it's going to matter, but you need it. Like, let's say Boston does push Cleveland to seven. They would much rather have that seventh game at home than they would on the road. But the thing is, they're not going to push them to seven. They'll be lucky to push them to five.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think if any team could take the Cavs, like, past five in the East, it's probably Toronto.
I agree. And maybe Milwaukee, but I don't think that's going to happen. But that's just because Milwaukee's such a pain in the ass.
Yeah, like, it's really interesting, too, because, like, if you look at what Milwaukee is, like, Giannis is going to make LeBron work, and, like, Middleton could be really good in that series. But, I mean, nothing else in that series, I think, really, like, threatens the Cavs very much.
I was talking about this with a couple of Fear the Story guys the other day about how, like, Milwaukee isn't really good yet, but they would just be the most annoying five game series in the history of five game series. Like, yeah, you just be like, it'd be kind of like the way they were with Detroit last year, except Cleveland would look a little less in control because Milwaukee plays a really physical style that's just not fun to play against. Mm-hmm. And like, they would beat them and they'd do so pretty thoroughly, but you just, at the end of it, you'd be like, man, I really wish they hadn't had to play that series.
Yeah, like the Pistons series last year, to me, is that, like, to think about this, like, compared to last year, to me, that is sort of the series, I think, you would, the type of series you'd want to start the playoffs. You get something that's going to get you engaged. You get you something that is going to push you. Like, don't forget this. Like, last year, the Cavs had, like, when they think about the dud they laid not too long ago, and they had that just, like, terrible game and didn't, like, play anybody and all that stuff, they did the same thing last year against the Grizzlies. You know, like, it was a pretty similar thing. I am very intrigued to see if, like, that is the same type of series that they would get again this year. Like, if Indiana represents something similar to Detroit, who was very physical, who wasn't very much...
I think they'll get up for them.
No, I think Indiana, like, definitely getting up. Is it like, the same
thing? No, I mean, I think Cleveland's going to get up for Indiana.
Yeah, I think to, like, an extent. Like, I think as much as they got up for Detroit last year. Which is, like, sort of maybe...
I think they get up a little more because I think LeBron respects Paul George enough to do so. Yeah. Also, I do want to point out that in comparison to last year, this year's Cleveland team is going in on a much more losing skid compared to last year's team, which had wins over Atlanta, a good Charlotte team, Atlanta again. Who else did they play?
I mean, the Cavs are going into this playoff run on the longest losing streak of their season.
Right. Like, that's not a good sign. And I know they've been resting for some of that. We were also kind of talking about this off-pod. When great teams lose, you don't see it coming. Like, I don't think this team's going to lose. I'm pretty sure they're going to go to the NBA Finals, but what if the switch doesn't flip? And in comparison to that, when the 2011 Mavs beat the Lakers, no one saw that coming because everyone kept saying all year, oh, the Lakers will just flip the switch in the playoffs and they'll be good. And they ignored all their problems in the regular season. It's like, oh, they're just bored. So while I don't think this Cleveland team is quite the same as that, I do have a slight concern of, like, what if some of these problems are real? What if the defense really is this big a mess? What if Paul George takes them to six games, they go into the second round, and all of a sudden they're in trouble? It's like, uh-oh, is this really a problem after all?
Yeah, 100% agree. We will – Carter Rodriguez, I mean, I love you, Carter, even though you left. But he tweeted this, like, 2 months ago that it was, like, when LeBron loses and the Cavs lose, like, it will surprise us. Like, it will be unexpected. And we're always going to be sort of searching for, like, when that happens. I don't think it's now.
I don't think it's now either, but
– Like, LeBron – I mean, LeBron's 32. Like, I think the minutes thing's, like, a tad overblown in at this point. But I think it was a True Hoop pod where they're talking about, like, the Thunder, like, kept Russell Westbrook's, like, minutes, like, capped, like, 34 all year, and I was like, the Cavs could have done that, and I think they probably should have. But I am very, very intrigued to see what this first round series looks like, and I'm very ready for the playoffs. A great regular season, but I think, like, if I'm gonna just say it now, I think I'm gonna go Cavs in five. Just Paul George wins Indiana one game at the Bankers Field House in Indianapolis.
I'll pick Cleveland to sweep because LeBron James loves getting that first round rest, and he really needs it.
Yeah, I think, like, he's gotten some rest. Kyrie's gotten some rest. You've gotten pretty much everyone that's gonna play. I think they're relatively healthy right now, which I think is about all you can ask for right now. Chris, before we get out of here, I'm gonna ask you one thing more about the regular season. And don't answer it, I guess, if you don't want to. If you don't want to, or just, I mean, you might, but you look at the awards, you look at MVP specifically, where would LeBron fallen for you? Like, we talked about that a little bit. I'm just kind of curious where you think LeBron might have fallen.
Ah, man, this is hard. Because he's having a career year, which is kind of insane.
Yeah, he's, like, awful on defense, but, like, offensively it's a career year.
And that's where I'm unsure. Because I feel like if I had an MVP vote, I'd pick James Harden, because while I don't think he's an incredible defender, I feel like he tries on defense this year. In comparison to Westbrook, who has a triple-double, who he's definitely pick and chosen plays. Which leaves me Kawhi Leonard and LeBron. And Kawhi Leonard anchors that Spurs defense and then does everything on offense, which is absolutely insane to me. While LeBron, as incredible as he is this year, he's definitely cherry-picked not just plays, but entire games. Which I feel like that matters. In any other year, he'd be MVP in a landslide, but in this year, I would have him fourth. Now, if he were to win the MVP for some reason, I wouldn't be mad at all. Like, he's the best player in the NBA, and he's having a career year. But that's all the evidence you need.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think he'd be third or fourth on my ballot. But he has had an incredible year. I'm very curious to see what his next gear sort of looks like in the playoffs, because I don't know. And I think there is something coming. I mean, and maybe we'll finally find out this weekend what Tyronn Lue's secret defensive plan is for the Cavs. Like, maybe everything will be fixed on Saturday.
It's ninjas. it's Cleveland Cavalier ninjas.
The Moondog puts on a ninja costume, dresses up as Daredevil, and starts defending the rim. That's the secret plan. It's six guys.
They all come out in, like, actual ninja costumes.
Yeah. I mean, look, I would not put anything past the Cavs' in-game.
Kevin Love would be all for that, and you know it.
Oh, yeah. Dude, Kevin Love would be a super into. I mean, JR would be into, probably. But
oh, my gosh. JR and Kevin Love would be super into that.
Look, the Cavs are the team that have made Hungry Hungry Hippos, like, an in-game, like, event.
Oh my god, I forgot about that.
Like, the Cavs are, like, the team that have just, like, a nutty in games. If any team is gonna get ninjas or, like, something to help the team's defense, I wouldn't put it past the Cavs. But I hope someone asked Ty Lue what his secret plan was on Saturday. And I'll be like, I'm not debuting that until the conference finals or something like that. I also will say this. Now, I'm curious to see how you feel about this. They only practice, like, once in March. They're gonna get to actually, like, practice now.
They're going to actually, like, prepare for playoff series, yeah, which is they've probably been waiting for forever.
Like, they literally, I think, practice once in March. I am very, very curious to see, like how much that helps them. Because, like, they've integrated all these pieces and stuff like that. They're going to get to work against a guy like Tavares in practice. Maybe even get him acclimated. Dante Jones will have that impact as well. I don't think people always understand, and I was guilty of this before too. Like, I think you don't realize that, like, the structure of the NBA season with the travel and how many number of games there are. Like, it's not like you're playing high school basketball and you, like, have, like, these, like, 2 days you play and then you practice, like, every other day. Like, you're lucky if you get to practice, like, 2-3 times a week in the NBA.
I'm just curious if Cleveland, like, their defense, I wonder if they're just, like, not a good regular season defensive team. Like, you know how there are some teams who they're these awesome offensive regular season teams, like the Raptors? They typically don't play very good offensively in the playoffs because of the way teams, like, kind of scheme on them. I wonder if, like, the Cavaliers, like, just the way they're designed, are not a good defensive regular season team. And then, like, when you actually give them, like, assignments and schemes and, like, matchups to exploit, they all of a sudden become, like, powerhouses.
It's certainly possible. I think, like, there's a limit on, like, on that, but I think there's probably some truth to that. But
it doesn't help that they don't try in the regular season, no, or at least this year. But, like, that's besides the point.
Effort matters, guys. Effort matters
in everything in life.
Yeah, everything 100% matters.
Just go to work tomorrow and be like, I'm just gonna try really hard today, but I'm not actually gonna give you results.
Yeah,
and we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, but that has been this episode of the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. Chris, thank you so much for coming on and staying up late with me into the early part of Thursday to do this podcast.
It was fun. I'm going to go finish those power rankings, then sleep forever.
Yeah, I'm not going to sleep forever because I got to do this. But you can make sure you find Chris on Twitter at Chris Barnwell. And if you don't like his, go rewind the pod and find his other handle if you want to tweet him. Angry
at things. Cavs Anada, C-A-V-S-A-N-A-D-A.
Yeah, shout out
all to all angry tweets to that account is my alternate argument accounts.
Yeah, shout out to the to Carter and Justin over at the Chase Down Pod. They're going to do some cool stuff as well. But we'll be back tomorrow on Friday to look more at Cavs Pacers again. The Cavs are the number two seed in the Eastern Conference. Regular season's over. They are going to start the their playoff run, a road to another title potentially on Saturday, April 15th against the Indiana Pacers at home, game one at 3 p.m. At the same time as the Indians, I believe, are facing the Tigers down the street. So it's going to be a pretty busy sports day in Cleveland on Saturday. But for myself, for Chris Barnwell, shout out to Rocket Riker, to the other Chris. This has been the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. We will talk to you again tomorrow.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Joe Harding, Cleveland.com. The Pacers won, so that's who you have this weekend. You had that battle with them not long ago, and Paul George went off. Just what are your initial thoughts about having seen them in the first round?
Well, you know, the world coach, Coach McMillan, did a great job second half of the season of, you know, figuring out his team and, you know, who he wanted to play and what lineups, and they've been playing well. And you know, with Paul George, you know, coming off pin downs and trying to run LeBron around off catching shoots because, you know, he can't post Bron or it's hard to go one-on-one. So he ran Bron around a lot. So we got to be prepared for that. Also with Teague being, you know, a fast guard who can get downhill and put a lot of pressure on you and get into the paint. So those are two things that, you know, we got to be better at. We got to be good at going into the playoffs.
Do you think, because I've been talking to you all day, and I mean, you've expressed a lot of confidence in your guys going forward in the playoffs. Do you think that there has been the idea that this team is somewhat vulnerable introduced at least into the locker room, and that may be something that could catch their attention in the playoffs?
I don't think so. I don't know what you mean by vulnerable in the locker room, but
the idea that you are vulnerable has been introduced into the locker room, like among your players, that hey, you guys could lose just based on how rough the regular season has been.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to the playoffs thinking that. You know, I'm going into it thinking we can win. And that's my job, to make sure everybody in the locker room understands that we're going to win. And, you know, that's on me. But I'm pretty sure a lot of the guys in the locker room feel the same way. So, you know, we had a tough regular season, you know, but you know, if we went 82-0 and lost first round, then you'd be right about that. So it's always something for you guys to write about. So, you know, like I said, going to the playoffs, you know, being second seed right now, and everyone's healthy, I feel very confident in what we can do.
Chris.
Ty, Chris Fedor, Cleveland.com. Drift mentioned before the game how big of a voice Dante is in the locker room and how he felt like you guys might have missed that during this season. You know Dante well. You've been around him. What is it about his voice that carries so much weight behind the scenes?
Well, he hasn't always been this way. You know, knowing him since he was younger, he was a know-it-all, and, you know, it was tough to get things through to him. But, you know, he's gotten older, you know, gotten married and, you know, have kids. And he's a veteran now. He understands. And just, you know, his positive energy off the bench of just keeping guys engaged and, you know, talking to guys on the bench, you know, when we having a lull during the game, trying to keep guys pumped up. And, you know, when you put him in a game like tonight, you know, he hasn't been here, you know, he played well, you know. So just having it around, you know, is good for us.
Jason
Lloyd, The Athletic. I'm just curious, for you personally, how much more involved are you going to be now in schemes and game plans and all that? I mean, obviously you're the head coach, but when they're coming night after night after night, too, as opposed to now when you have time to devote to one team, how much more active and involved will you be in the scheme?
I'm going to do the schemes, yes. Very involved.
And how is that different from the regular season?
Well, the regular season, you just try to, you know, put in a foundation. You can't change every single night and do something different because you're playing different opponents, different point guards, different bigs, different two guards. So, you know, when you get a chance to play in the playoffs and you lock into one team, and, you know, I've always been a guy that, you know, in the playoffs, I want to take away the team's best strength, you know, what they do well, take that away and make them beat you another way.
When you were with Doc, were you the point man on a lot of that defensive stuff, or did Doc take over from you in the postseason?
I was.
You were?
Mm-hmm.
So it's obviously something you have a lot of experience with and you're fairly comfortable.
Yes.
Dave McBenham at ESPN. I know you like to pick your spots when you address the team or kind of get their attention. Do you have anything planned before tip of game one or whatever that is, maybe anything.
We're going to have a discussion tomorrow because we're going to have, you know, film work and we're going to have a little walkthrough. So I'll address the team tomorrow, yes.
Will you draw on anything from last year, do you imagine, or focus more on this year?
We'll focus more on this year.
Back to Joe.
JR is slumping again. I think he's 7 of his last 36, 30, something like that, over these last 4 games, and those are all losses. It's not all on him, but how concerned are you that he seems to have taken a step back after that little hot streak?
For me, he probably should be 7 for 50. I think he turned down a lot of shots, you know, and trying to put the ball on the floor and make plays and just do what you do. You know, he's a great shooter. You're not going to shoot the ball great every single night, and we know that. But, you know, the biggest thing for, you know, for us is, you know, defensively, you know, being able to, you know, put him on Paul George some, you know, being able to put him on C.J. Miles, who always kills us, you know. So, you know, he's got to be great defensively. And, you know, with or without J.R.'s shot, we know we can score the basketball, but we got to be better defensively. And, you know, he's going to have a lot of responsibility, you know, going into the playoffs. So just his main focus is just defensively. We know he can make shots, and we know he can shoot the basketball. So that's not really a concern of mine.
Back over to Chris, and then we'll finish up with Marlon.
Ty, does it feel different this year going into the postseason than it did last year?
You know what's crazy, Chris, is that this season seemed like it went by faster than the one last year. It seemed like it was half a season for me, but it just felt like, man, like 2 years, you know. But this year went by fast. I mean, the difference, you know, to me is we got some new pieces, you know, that we've been trying to integrate, you know, all year on and off. Had some key injuries this year that set us back. But for the most part, you know, it's pretty much the same. I think the East has gotten better. You know, Toronto's gotten better. Boston's gotten better. You know, Indiana's playing good basketball. The Bulls finally figured out what they're going to do and who they're going to be. Same thing with Milwaukee. So teams have gotten better, and that's just the biggest difference to me. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be a bigger challenge for us this year.
Back to